Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our speakers, Kevin Pauga. Kevin is the Assistant Athletic Director at Michigan State University and founder of KPI Sports. At the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Kevin will deliver a talk titled Using Analytics in Intercollegiate Athletics. Kevin, welcome and thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you, Scott.
Great. So I'll start with the question I ask everyone here. Just tell me a little bit about your background and how you got involved in analytics. From reading up on you, it sounded like it happened at a fairly young age. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, I've always had kind of a fascination for puzzles and solving problems, and even when I was young, I mean, I would be the one that would wait and get my baseball weekly when I was 8, 9, 10 years old and try and get to try and figure out where the patterns were in baseball schedules, and even growing up in elementary school, try to solve those good old logic problems that you would have in third grade. So the idea of trying to find solutions based on data, I'm not sure that I ever thought that it would land me in kind of some of the spots that it has, but it was something right from the get-go that I had a level of interest in.
So is it true that you have Cubs schedules from the 80s committed to memory? I've read that somewhere. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I've been I think accused might be the right word. I've been accused of being able to kind of think back and have a little bit of a photographic memory where I could tell you dates and opponents and where I was, and now with Michigan State basketball schedules and Cub schedules and Little League and dates and what day of the week and all those things. I'm not sure if that's a good thing to know or have, but it's something that I'm able to do, and sometimes it comes in handy and other times it's just useless information.
Sure. So you were a Little League coach, right? And you were the guy keeping the book and keeping stats while you were coaching third base. What was anything you were doing in that role? Would you consider that analytics at the Little League level?
You know, it was. I was real fortunate that during my 4 years of high school, those four springs, I coached what is my youngest brother. It just happened to coincide with his 9 through 12 year old Little League year. So I kind of followed him through, and by the time I was a senior, I was the head coach of a Little League team, and kind of earned the respect of a lot of adults, and they were nice enough to kind of let me run with things, and we had a great experience. I was umpiring. I was the scheduling director for the league in Clarendon Hills, Illinois, and did some different things. So I had we had a team with the kind of the 11 and 12 year olds those last 2 years, and you're right, I was the one keeping the scorebook and on third base and charting pitch counts and OPS and kind of building lineups in terms of sequencing who should bat above or below people based on the rules of stolen bases and first thirds and all those things. So we were definitely doing some things. I mean, I still do that a little bit with my rec league softball team now, where we're tracking some of those same numbers and building batting orders based on, hey, where are we going to need our pinch runners? And hey, this guy's double play prone, so we need to put somebody that could hit a double or steal a base in front of him. So even now I'm still doing some of that, but you're right. It started kind of with the Little League and the batting orders and the analytics of doing that. But it was more than just math. It was relationships. It was having great fun with a lot of kids in the area that I grew up while I was a high school student.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So let's skip ahead a few years and talk about KPI a little bit and tell me how that came about. Where did you get the initial idea for that? how it's evolved over the years, and it looks like it could be even more relevant going forward with the NCAA tournament. Can you tell me a little bit about KPI?
Yeah, so I after I graduated from Hinsdale Central High School outside of Chicago, came to Michigan State as a basketball manager, and got a chance to work for Coach Izzo. And one of the summers while I was in undergrad, I was kind of looking for something that was a little bit more detailed than the RPI, that could kind of explain rather than give me, hey, this is my RPI, and not really know or understand why. I was looking for something that could kind of quantify values on a game by game basis as opposed to a team basis. I kind of attribute it back to being that third or fourth grader that would write the answer to the math problem, and then the teacher would get real upset that I didn't show my work.
Sure. Sure.
I kind of think of it as that KPI is a mechanism of showing your work along the way. And hey, here's the value of each game that's played. And here's some of those details. It doesn't mean that there aren't some outliers along the way. It doesn't mean that in a 30 to 35 game basketball season that there's not a couple that you look like and God, that feels a little high or that feels a little low. But those values are intended to make you think, and intended to kind of offer context to a team's resume. So that summer, I kind of wrote the basis that has become KPI, and kind of went on a scale that the worst loss possible is about -1, a virtual tie is about 0, and the best win possible is right about +1, and kind of ranking those wins and losses along the way and assigning them values. And it's proven to be relatively accurate to what the men's basketball committee has done over the last several years, and truly dating back close to 15. I've got 6 years of true data since the committee's released their true 1-68 seed list, but even prior to that, just knowing the actual seeds, it's had some value, and it's grown in interest as its accuracy has become known among the college basketball community, and as it bleeds into some other sports at some other levels, it's kind of had some of the same results.
Yeah. So you were asked though to go to Indianapolis, correct, and to discuss your ranking system, but also maybe some other alternative advanced metrics that could help increase the accuracy of the selection and seeding process. Is that correct?
It is, and so last January, the NCAA invited several people to Indianapolis, and Ken Pomeroy was there, Jeff Sagarin was there, Jerry Palm, Andy Glockner, Ben Alomar from ESPN, several others. And what was really kind of a cool little Friday, I don't know if you'd call it a nerd fest or what to, I hope that I'm not offending the others in the room, but we kind of dug in on the mathematical side of the rankings and the unintended consequences of going down certain roads and kind of having some open dialogue, and certainly we didn't leave with any answers for the NCAA staff, the men's basketball committee, the NABC ad hoc committee, but I think it was worthwhile discussion that I know that there's continuing to have at the NCAA level, and I think that it's a testament to that staff and to the administrators that are involved, that they want to be further educated and they want to get things right. But even with that meeting, I think that it's important to note that any changes that may be forthcoming would be tweaks. I mean, this is a process that has been built over many, many years. I mean, the RPI was first written in the early 1980s, and there's been a selection committee that's determined teams, and there's been a lot of great work done by a lot of very intelligent people over the years. So this is more about providing maybe a little bit more refined information than an overhaul. There's a lot of smart people in that room that have done a lot of good work that shouldn't go unnoticed.
Definitely, definitely. So, an aside here: if the KPI rankings had been more involved with the selection, would Wisconsin have been an 8 seed this year? I didn't tell you I was going to ask you that one.
Yeah, you know, for any specific team or what I'm at, I usually like to let the math do the talking. And but I'll say this, having been at Michigan State for a long time, that I think once things are bracketed, it's so much more about matchups than it is about the seed. Seeding is certainly fun to dissect, but it's really incredible how come Monday or Tuesday of that first week of the tournament, the conversation shifts quickly from the seed to the matchups.
Definitely.
And I know that here at Michigan State, we've been very fortunate over the years that we've had some success in the NCAA tournaments, just like Wisconsin has, having been to 19 straight in NCAAs in Madison, and we've been to 20 straight. I mean, those are two of the longest streaks all time. But I know we've made it to Final Fours going through chalk brackets, and we've made it to Final Fours where we've gotten help with upsets along the way. Sometimes we're the one doing the upsetting. Sometimes, as happened 2 years ago, we got upset. So matchups have so much to do with it. And you may be poor against a team that's got size, or a pick and pop four that you can't guard as well, or a certain matchup may get you. Those type of things happen even over the course of any season, really.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't mean to give you a hard time there. It's what fun would it be if we didn't have these discussions to have on Sunday night or Monday night after the brackets came out, right?
So you
started talking about your time at Michigan State. Let's get to that then. What's been your analytics work specific to the basketball program, the athletic department? How has it changed over time? And how have your colleagues there accepted it over time, or grown in use, or was it a challenge at first?
Yeah, you know, I started as a student manager here at MSU, and I had actually during high school, I'd worked with my high school basketball team, and we did a lot of stat work, and there was a science teacher at Hinsdale Central that did a lot of work as well. So I had some background, and the folks at MSU knew that as I kind of tried out to be a manager. So I was put in some situations early on relative to practice stats and practice performances and data collection right from the get-go. But so I spent 4 years as a manager, moved into a role as the video coordinator for 4 years for Coach Izzo. And Coach Izzo is one that he certainly likes to have data. He likes to go by feel a lot, and he likes to have data to support it. But he's one that even to this day, he'll have the season stats for the top 25 teams, the season stats for the Big Ten teams, all printed out every time before he leaves for a road trip. And he'll be sitting on a plane or whatnot, and he'll be going through just season box scores, looking at hey, how are teams performing, where are teams struggling, and then when we're getting ready to play an upcoming opponent, one of the things that ends up on his desk, whether it's from our great sports information staff or from the current managers, is they'll go through and print every box score of a team that we're about to play. So if we're playing Wisconsin in the 28th, 29th game of the season, there's a packet of 28 Wisconsin box scores for him to kind of go through. And I think that even though the way that I dig into data may be different than the way he does, I think that for Coach Izzo in particular, he and I are very similar, that I'd rather see raw data, and I think he'd rather see raw data and come up with his and my own conclusion rather than have somebody tell me what the data says. And in general, you can make data say just about anything within reason if you're looking to support an argument. But I'd rather see the data kind of drive where the conversation goes for, especially on the sports side of things. I mean, you can't be stubborn enough to try and prove a point with your data. You need to know the data, understand the data, and understand how to work the data or use the data to your advantage along the way.
So are there times though when maybe you're providing the data and you think that one of the decision makers that you support is maybe interpreting it incorrectly or not the same, maybe not incorrectly, but differently than you? And do you then jump in and try to give your take, or do you sit back and let that go without comment?
Well, for sure. I mean, you always pick your moments, but certainly if it's something and where I would dig into the data, I mean, I would certainly, if I found something that, hey, somebody's shooting the ball much better at home versus on the road, or somebody's, we would often back in my video coordinator days pull, hey, what are certain players' stats and wins versus losses? Get into lineup combinations a little bit. I mean, and there's certain segments of the line, the plus minus, if you will, that can be real deceiving among five-man combinations. But if you're looking at different two-man combinations, or if you're looking at a subset of data of, hey, we've got two point guards on our team, and sometimes we shift one of them to the two, and hey, what do we look like when those two guys are playing together? Or what are we looking like when we're playing a big lineup versus a small lineup? Or those type of things, I think, are more informative than just looking at a strict plus minus. Because you could just be the guy that's on the floor with four other guys that are good and end up with a good plus minus. So I think that it's important to look at context in general and be able to inform people. And if you think that somebody's looking at it wrong, I don't think that even to phrase it as wrong is correct. I think that it's just a different way to look at it. And maybe they're offering information that'll help you, and vice versa. And so I think it's important to see somebody else's perspective, hear somebody else's perspective, and make a more informed description of any data as a result. It's conversation.
Great. So what advice would you have to anyone looking to get involved in this new field of sports analytics? You're somebody who, even at a pretty young age, has had a ton of experience. What would you advise to somebody who came to you?
Yeah, I've been real fortunate. I joke that Coach Izzo hired me three times. he hired me as a manager. After I graduated, he hired me as a video coordinator, and then I left for the Big Ten Conference, and he hired me back as director of ops. And which either means that he keeps hiring me or that I keep leaving, depending on how you want to interpret that. But I think in general, even just beyond the analytics side, that you always need to have your head up, just relative to knowing your surroundings, never knowing who the person is that may be the one that ends up helping you get a job. And Coach Izzo and Mark Hollis and several people here at Michigan State have been unbelievable to me and treated me with so much opportunity over the years. But different people have those different opportunities, and you never know when those opportunities are even in the moment. So you're building a network of contacts, and it may be the athletic director at Michigan State that helps you, or it may be somebody that you meet once along the way, or you just need to know and understand that you're not quite sure when that moment will come. You've got to be ready for it, even though you might not even know that it's happening in the moment. So certainly keep your head up, be attentive, and introduce yourself to somebody. Walking up to somebody and saying hello, hey, my name's Kevin Powell. I'm a basketball manager at Michigan State. Nice to meet you. Sometimes just that alone is a worthwhile part of the conversation, and also understanding too that there's a fine line between making contacts and being a burden on somebody's schedule. That there is such a thing as overdoing it. I think in general, people want to help people. I mean, I know that many people have helped me, and I certainly enjoy trying to pass that on to others as people reach out. But understand that, hey, if Michigan State's in the middle of the Big Ten tournament on a Friday, and you're sending a resume, you might not get a response on that day. So kind of have a context of what your audience is, and try not to be a burden on different people's schedule. I could give you stories until we're both blue in the face as to how different people have ended up at Michigan State, how different people would have gotten jobs and gotten different responsibilities, and even how I've kind of found some of my opportunities. And some of them are very calculated, and others are very random. I mean, we hired a graduate manager at one point. He happened to be on campus visiting. He had a background as a basketball manager at another Big Ten school, and he showed up on a day where nothing was really going on one morning. So we spent an hour having a conversation and realized that hey, this guy's really, really sharp. And now 10 years later, he's an assistant coach in the NBA. So go figure that you never know when those opportunities will come. So just keep your head on a swivel and be ready when they're presenting themselves.
That's really good advice, Kevin. Kevin, let's wrap this up. Where can people find out more about what you do, and where can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Kevin Pauga, which is at KEVINPAUGA, all one word. And then a lot of the KPI data is also on Twitter at KPI Sports, and that's at KPI SPORTS. And then additionally, some of the KPI data, including rankings, is available online at kpisports.net.
Very good, Kevin. Again, my guest today was Kevin Pauga, Assistant Athletic Director at Michigan State. He'll be speaking at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, a talk titled Using Analytics in Intercollegiate Athletics. Kevin, thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Scott.
Great. Thanks for listening today. Again, the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details. And while you're following Kevin on Twitter, make sure you follow the conference on Twitter at analyticsconf. That's at analyticsconf. Thanks for listening.